Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Some 45,000 Somalis live in Ohio, the lion's share of which live in central Ohio, especially Columbus, and their numbers are expected to increase in the next 5 years. 40% have become United States citizens, but this immigrant community still struggles with poverty, literacy, housing. And when a disturbance arose last month, as an estimated 1,000 Somalis arrived to sign up for low-cost housing at a northeast side apartment complex, the headline said it showed a need for cheap housing. But the story by Mark Ferencik in the Columbus Dispatch a few days later ended with Napoleon Bell, the executive director of the Columbus Community Relations Commission, saying he planned to meet with this local immigrant and refugee community to talk about what police officers and firefighters can do to make Somali immigrants feel more comfortable around them. Not surprisingly, one idea is that qualified Somalis should feel welcome to apply for jobs with the police and fire departments. Mark wrote about that last week in Columbus and Minneapolis, where they've gotten a head start on that. Coming up, we'll hear from the Minneapolis Fire Department. But joining us now to talk about the Columbus part of the story is Mark Ferencik, who covers Columbus neighborhoods for The Dispatch. Welcome back, Mark.
Hi, Ann.
So NPR did a story on this issue back in 2011, just about a year ago in November 2011, as part of a report about how Al-Qaeda-affiliated groups were recruiting young Somalis in Minneapolis and how Columbus police were worried that they might turn their sights on central Ohio. They said then that they were stepping up efforts to establish ties with the Somali community, and I was wondering what you've seen so far in that regard.
There are still quarterly meetings among the Somali community and leadership in the community and local law enforcement to, again, build those bridges, create those relationships between law enforcement and the community to build trust and also to share information. Those seem to be going well. Those seem to be going smoothly. In the meantime, like you said, the city as a whole, city of Columbus, is making an effort to recruit more police and firefighters from minority communities, and included in that, obviously, is the Somali community, too, since its numbers are growing, the thought being that, like in other cities, the population of the police force, the makeup of the police force and the fire department should also reflect the community at large. If the Somali community is growing, there should be more police and firefighters. But also, for practical reasons, if you have people from the community in those divisions, they can act as interpreters. They can also act as bridges, again, between the community and law enforcement and firefighters to, again, build trust, to communicate better, to serve as liaisons in some way, and create some trust there so people would be more likely and forthcoming to contact police and fire when they need them.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News, and also with us is Hassan Omar of the Somali Community Association of Ohio. Welcome to the show, Hassan.
Thanks.
Tell us about those quarterly meetings. Do you attend those, and tell us what happens and what you think of them?
Actually, this meeting began back on 2006, when a young Somali man got shot, one of the sheriff department, and Somali community that time was not happy what happened and felt that was unjustified killing. Mm-hmm. Then we created what we call a CIT, Community Intervention Team, led by the Community Relations Commission, and many different departments became a part of that process, including a federal agent, firefighters, Columbus Police Department, community members. And finally, we signed an agreement that shows, we agreed on to work together, to collaborate, and create an understanding between Somalis and law enforcement agency. Later on, in Minneapolis, as you mentioned, 20 Somalis left and joined with Al-Shabaab back home in Somalia. And then there was a fear that Columbus youth might become also radicalized. Then the local law enforcement created a program, a quarterly meeting, and always we have a topic we cover sometimes not only limited for specific thing, but kind of education. Sometimes they talk about the health issues.
Is this a meeting that includes youth?
Not really. It's a community leaders, religious leaders, neighborhood leaders, and a quarterly meeting. And actually, law enforcement agents always came, FBI, police department, all suburban police chiefs, safety department, and city of Columbus, as well as some like IRS, immigration, and that's a broad discussion about the community, how to educate, and also to create a comfort.
In that, in NPR story I talked about earlier, a man was interviewed for it from Columbus, Jibril Muhammad. He said that at that point he didn't think any recruitment effort was working. Do you agree, or, back a year ago, if there was any recruitment that was working, and has anything changed much?
About becoming police?
Yeah,
or,
police and fire.
Actually, we know that police protects us, protect our property, and also our, you know, protect and enforce the law. And without the police, we wouldn't have a stable society. Therefore, I disagree with him, because even the prior, you know, we became a government, like colonial era, the only decent job could have available was to be a police officer or a security. And then it was honor to be a police officer. So I disagree with him. I've been working for this community for a long time, mm-hmm. and I'm aware of exactly what's going on. So I haven't seen a lot of recruitment coming from the police department trying to reach out to the community. And we would like to see the recruitment to be increased, mm-hmm. because it will give us more assimilation. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the community will take part in the all, you know, protection at the same time, create a good communication among the community and the police department.
Mark Ferencik, some Somalis have passed the civil service examination, which is, I guess, the first hurdle. And as of that NPR report last year, one had passed one part of the police exam. Has anything improved on that score? And what's at the crux of the struggle when it comes to this issue?
Well, from what I was told last week, is we have one Somali candidate who will be in the new police class starting this month, who would be, I believe, the first Somali police officer in the city of Columbus. I think there are a number of struggles. A lot of it is, again, just convincing people that it's a good job. I know that when I talked to the fire chief last week, Chief Paxton, a lot of people in the community still don't realize that it's a good prospect for them, that they can get a good job. It's creating a little bit of trust so people can foresee themselves in these roles. I think there's still a language barrier in terms of examinations and things like that, too, that is another hurdle to be overcome. Perhaps educational issues, I'm not sure. But it's also just realizing that these opportunities are out there and getting the word out that you can do this. That's what they tried to do in Minneapolis. The community itself had a meeting earlier this month, mm-hmm. where the word went out. The Minneapolis Fire Department is looking to recruit firefighters. About 35 young men showed up at the meeting to get information about how to do this. It's just simply advertising and letting people know that these opportunities are out there and that you will be welcome if you apply. At least give it a chance. So I think Columbus is doing that as well now. They're sending people to community meetings, correct? And meeting with people here to tell them these opportunities exist. Please get out in the community and tell people about it.
Ultimately, Somalis make up a pretty small fraction of the community still, but it's an important part. There's always this dichotomy when it comes to recruiting minorities to something like a police force or a fire department or that something of that nature, because there's the question of, well, where do you use them? Do you pigeonhole them to just respond to or largely respond to, say, Somali or Hispanic or pick your community, your ethnic community, your ethnic minority issues? Or are they part of the force at large, and do they then assimilate both ways, where they're exposing the Somali community in, I guess, a positive way? Has that come up in the discussions at all? about how you would use them if you did get them into the force?
I think Somalis who live in Columbus and those who live in Minneapolis are same. You know, they face the same issues.
Mm-hmm.
And Minneapolis hired 4 officers who came from Somali community. And the 5th one will graduate this month. Also, St. Paul has another officer. So the total officers are 6.
Right, that's in that area, yeah.
In that area only. In Columbus, we do not have any single, you know, Somali or other immigrants actually to be police officers. I can tell you that there was a language barrier early on, but we have a lot of young people who graduate college and universities, and almost born here in the United States and willing to join the force. So I think...
But do you see the role as one where it's responding primarily to Somali community needs at this point?
The Somali community needs to be a police officer or firefighters, both. It's very initial.
Yeah, I know in Minneapolis there are, I want to say, 2 who I was told, police officers who were assigned specifically to an area where the Somali population is pretty dense, again, to serve, again, as liaisons. And so they can, I presume, bring up problems in the community to police and vice versa. They can communicate back and forth and just, again, build that trust between the police department and the community. Revolving around community issues or crime issues or whatever, but they have been stationed in the area where there's a dense population of Somalis.
Fire Chief Greg Paxton told you that they need to rebrand their product. What did he mean by that?
I think that's what we were talking about a little bit earlier. Again, is that to say that this is public safety is a good option, that this is a good career path, this is something that you could excel in. The opportunities are available since, again, Columbus is trying to boost its minority applicants in fire and police, and to see that as an option. Now, in terms of how they're approaching that and what they're doing to rebrand themselves, I'm not really sure, but it's something along those lines to at least get out there more into the community and spread the word that they're welcome, that people are welcome, and that fire and police are looking for more minority candidates and again, immigrant candidates, and specifically from the Somali community.
Yeah, they're hiring a consultant. I think you reported for both fire and police to increase diversity. Is that just with the Somali community or other groups
as
well?
No, I think that's with everybody, correct, yeah.
Before we move on, Hassan Omar, what about that stigma? What is it about? It can't be that people don't know that police and fire make decent incomes and have good benefits and are, you know, it's a good prospect for them financially. So what is the stigma?
I don't see any stigma being a police officer or firefighters, because these people are first responders. And we see people who always volunteer for their community. And try to improve the life of the community.
So you think that's not an issue?
There is no issue and there is no stigma, actually. But what we like to see is, like, if they reach out to the community and willing to talk to the young men and women who wants to join, there will be many of them are interested in to join. For example, last week when there was some article on Dispatch, and then we put the Facebook on that information. At least 7 young men who was very physically fit as well as, you know, language, speaking good English,
mm-hmm.
and willing to be a firefighter, came to us and say, how can we apply? We told them this was a story, and hopefully in the future there will be some slots. So if you are interested, and this is something that we need to push in, because we would like this community to assimilate further into the mainstream of America, unless we open the doors for all departments, whether it's the police, fire department, or other groups, then the community will not be fully assimilated. So this is a beginning, and we've been here almost for 20 years. Mm-hmm. Somali been here for almost 20 years, and we should not talk about, and there will be no little Somali. This is America, and these people are becoming Americans. You remember last time when
40%.
40% mm-hmm. people are voting. You know, people are developing businesses. So we would like to see Somali firefighters or other immigrants or, you know, Hispanics. Or so if they open the door, there are people who are qualified to become.
Well, we're going to say goodbye to Mark Verinchuk right now and move ahead. But, Mark, thanks for joining us today. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
And then coming up, we're going to hear from the Minneapolis Fire Department about what their efforts have been and how they're working. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Sunday, Syrian President Bashar al-Assad made his first speech in 6 months. He called the factions fighting against his authoritarian regime murderous criminals, and he ruled out any chance of talks that could end the violence. I'm Ari Shapiro, President Assad, his inner circle, and his options. Next Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
Talk of the Nation this afternoon from 2 to 4 on 89.7 NPR News. And it's 28 degrees in downtown Columbus, partly sunny skies today, a high of 44. Clouds for tonight and a low of 33. Sunshine and a high of 45 on Wednesday. Support for 89.7 comes from Ohio State's Wexner Medical Center, announcing the opening of Spirit of Women Park. Thanks to the generous support from the Ingram family. Located near the Wexner Medical Center, the Spirit of Women Park features thousands of tiles hand-painted by donors to honor special women in their lives. medicalcenter.osu.edu. And All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
A few weeks ago, 35 young men, all from the Somali community, showed up at a meeting in Minneapolis to learn more about how to join that city's fire department. Minneapolis boasts the nation's largest Somali community, and officials in that city, as well as neighboring St. Paul, want their departments to reflect the makeup of those cities. Joining us to talk about that effort, the tactics, and the challenges is Melanie Rucker. She's captain of the Minneapolis Fire Department. Welcome, Captain Rucker.
Good morning. Good morning.
A Canadian television news report last fall said that Toronto officials could take a cue from the Minneapolis police, whose recruitment strategies, they said, were helping bring down crime in that city's Somali community. I know you don't speak for the police, but the fire department wants to include Somalis as well. What's the motivation for you?
Well, our motivation is that we recognize that the Somali population in Minnesota is the highest number, and we want our fire department to reflect the diversity of our community, so we're reaching out, and we know that the diversity of the Somali culture will bring knowledge, comfort, and familiarity, you know, to the community as well as to the Minneapolis Fire Department to help efforts in life-saving reach out programs that we have and life-saving events that we have to take place in our city.
Has it been easy to do that?
It has been. What we use, and we recognize that we have community liaisons that, you know, the community members, the smaller community members, are more familiar with and comfortable with and have more trust. And so we use those community liaisons to make contacts. And then that way, when they see us and when we come out to do that recruitment effort, they're more comfortable and acceptance of our presence.
We were talking earlier about possible stigmas, and my other guest, Hassan Omar of the Somali Community Association of Ohio, said there really isn't any stigma to joining. It has more to do with language barriers and that sort of thing. It's just kind of practical problems. Any stigma associated in your community?
No, there's not any stigma. It's just that the career firefighter position is not recognized or a sought-out profession known to the Somali population and to a lot of other minority communities. And so our efforts are to, you know, put the information out there to clarify, to make it known the qualifications that are needed and opportunities that are there. It's just putting the information out there and giving them the knowledge and the opportunity to apply and to know about the career.
One of the challenges, I guess, is the fact that the force hasn't hired anyone new in any way in 7 years. There must be a lot of competition for those slots.
It is. It's a very sought-out profession, and it's a wonderful profession to give back to your community. So it is going to be a large number of applicants that are going to be coming out. And so that's why we want to make sure that the large pool that comes out has that diversity, has the Somali community involved and part of that large pool. And so they have a good opportunity just as well as anyone else that's seeking this career.
You know, whenever we talk about these kinds of issues, there's always somebody out there, and sometimes they come on the show and sometimes they don't, that complains that immigrants are taking away jobs that people who already live here should be getting, and they get an unfair advantage because of the recruitment that goes on. How do you respond to those kind of criticisms?
We don't. We just, because we know that we are out in the community and we're recruiting the community and as a whole. And the Somali community is part of our community. They're here to stay. So our recruitment efforts aren't just only in the Somali community. We make sure that we touch every walk of life out there and give everyone the opportunity and information. So we make sure that the information is presented to the community in an entire whole. And the Somali community is part of that community. So our efforts to reach out to them is just as well as equal to the efforts to reach out to any member of the community here in Minneapolis.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News, and I'm talking with Captain Melanie Rucker of the Minneapolis Fire Department. Also with us is Hassan Omar of the Somali Community Association of Ohio. If you have a question or comment, want to join the conversation, give us a call, 614-292-8513. You can also email us at allsides@wosu.org, and you can go to our Facebook page and post your question or comment there. Captain Rucker, you have now, I guess it's 5 in the Minneapolis police force and 1 in St. Paul, right?
Correct. There's and that's in the police force. We currently do not have anyone from East African descent, Somali descent on the Minneapolis Fire Department.
And what have you learned from the police force's experience as far as that kind of that critical mass of breaking breaking into the force that way? Now they have 5. What happened and what changed things? How did it go from 0 to 5?
I think it's exactly what we're doing. We're presenting the information out there and letting, you know, the East African community know that this is a job opportunity and that we want them to be part of our, you know, of our force, of the Minneapolis Fire Department. And it's a great opportunity, and it's a great, you know, position to have. So I think it's just the recruitment efforts that, you know, that they put out there to put the knowledge out there to the community. And since we haven't hired since 2006 to open up applications, you know, they are a little step ahead of us. So I believe that, you know, that we will get there.
I guess, Hassan, did you want to? I guess you're coming into a good, solid second generation of Somali or East African Americans now, which helps, right?
Correct. You know, you have the younger population, you know, and it's kind of like they border both cultures. You know, they have they're more, you know, a little bit more Americanized and as well as, you know, continuing to keep their culture as well. And so it's a little easier to present, and then the opportunity is there and the want and the need. I mean, a lot of time when we had the group session, there was a lot of young Somali males that were interested and said, I love the fire department. I would love to be a part of the
Everybody
fire
wants to be a fighter when they're a kid, right?
Yeah.
How do you prepare the force, the fire department, the people who already work there? And I know you can't speak for the police department, but how do you prepare them for a new element?
Well, Minneapolis has a high number of diversity. We are 33%, and we're pretty much a reflection of our community. And we have no tolerance of any type of discrimination or any type of, you know, maltreatment or different treatment. We know that our fire department reflects our community, and we serve our community. And so the best way to serve our community is also to have that type of mentality, to know that there's diversity, there's differences. Everyone has different ways and different cultures. And so we don't tolerate any type of discrimination or anything like that here in the Minneapolis Fire Department. So that's going to be easy to acclimate anyone that wants to join the Minneapolis Fire Department.
Hassan Omar, you were at the event a couple weeks ago when people were getting in line for the low-income housing opportunity, and there were about 1,000 people showed up for 200 slots. A little bit of chaos ensued. They used, I think, pepper spray to calm the crowd, if that is what calms crowds. Yeah. You were there. Do you think it would have helped to have somebody who has a relationship with the Somali or the East African community in general? Would that have helped in that kind of a situation?
That would be helpful. For example, in many occasions, I saw when the firefighters came to the neighborhood where most of people live, there are Somalis. Mm-hmm. People always converted on them. And there's a language barriers, and there is been very difficult even to communicate.
And everybody's talking at
once. Everybody's talking about. And then if they have a Somali person speaking Somali language, firefighters, professional, that would be ease and help the fire department and make their job easier, not to be only the fire, but also to ease their job, to facilitate, to communicate better the community where they are, the people they are helping. So the firefighters, I think, job is a wonderful job, and it's needed. We know they are first responders, and as we mentioned, the Somalis are growing in Central Ohio and Minneapolis, and we need to really hire some of them and make an effort, an outreach. In that way, the community will be able to become a part of the force and protect our community.
Captain Rucker, is it just about being a firefighter per se, or are there other slots on the force that where you could use where it would be beneficial?
Well, it's pretty much the firefighter position. Minneapolis Fire are first responders as well, so we go to a lot of homes and community facilities where there are, you know, Somali cultures, there's Hispanic cultures, and where, you know, the language, there is a language detriment there. So, and then as well as just the culture, you know, might be somewhat different as well. And so it definitely is a benefit to have someone that's familiar with the language and someone that's familiar with the culture present to just set the constituent at ease. So right now we're just having the firefighter position open, but we, you know, again, we're first responders as well. So we're in the community doing medicals as well as putting out fires. Mm-hmm. So having, you know, that diversity with our fire department puts, you know, any person at ease, and and then with the minority population here we have in a city, it just makes things a little easier.
Hassan Omar, are there other agencies in the community where it would be helpful to have this kind of outreach, such as what the fire and police are at least talking about now in Columbus?
I remember back in 2004, 2005, there was a program called ABC, and that effort led by Community Relations Commission, and introduced the firefighters to the community. Also, some community liaisons from the fire department came out and gave a presentation to the community and explained to them fire protection, as well as if they need assistance, where to go, whom to call. And those was one community we knew. But today, as we mentioned, there are a lot of people who graduated and American, you know, they became American, actually. Mm-hmm. And citizen qualify. So those people need to be reached out. And I think the city of Columbus is ultimate. The leadership has a decision to introduce the fire department to immigrant groups, because immigrants are growing. And we don't want to continue always say immigrants. People, they were refugees yesterday, they're citizens today. Mm-hmm. Tomorrow they're going to be professors and doctors and firefighters. So we see communities growing one side. If you look, the business area, the community is growing, education community is growing, then why not the police department? Why not the fire department? And be honest with you, the city of Columbus, I think, has an ultimate decision to increase the firefighters, because if they are not, right now, slots are available, then the department cannot hire anybody. I'm not advocating for
them. Right, if there are no slots, there's no slots, right?
Exactly. Yeah. So I'm not advocating for them, but I believe that the firefighters for the immigrant groups are essential, and that will also even more assimilations, more integrations, and working together and collaborations, and that will be easy, more people feel comfortable culturally too.
You know, Captain Rucker, in the police department, our new police chief has said that she wants a all-out effort to recruit more women to the force as well. And there is that subgroup of gender among the East African community, women. How important, how does that make a difference too?
It makes a difference as well, as because, like you're saying, the younger population is growing, and more assimilation and more assimilation to the culture. So Minneapolis Fire has a 22% of women on the job. So it's, you know, not just reaching out to the Somali mm-hmm. men, but also the Somali women. And so either or, you know, we would want them to also apply, and that, you know, I am an African American female on the job, and I've been on for almost 14 years, and I was only not gained knowledge about this job through recruitment. So putting the information out there and letting, you know, the young women see that this is a job opportunity that they can have, that they're capable of doing, it's key. So that's why, you know, getting out to the community and making sure that, you know, they know that all walks of life, gender, this job is not just, you know, the old firefighters. This is the new fire department, and it needs to reflect the community as a whole, and that women are capable of being firefighters as well as police officers. And, you know, you just have to let them know that this is a career opportunity that they can have.
Joe in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Joe.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, thank you.
Always appreciate your show. Try to listen to it as often as I can.
Thanks.
I've been listening, not from the top of the hour, but for about the last 20, 25 minutes. I understand the need for community outreach with the communities changing ethnicity and so many other things over the last 20, 25, 30 years. But I think the problem I have with Columbus Police and Columbus Fire, Columbus Police had been dispatched just less than a week ago, and they're recruiting. And I guess I have a problem with the recruiting of certain genders, ethnicities, colors. I feel like that is so antiquated. It's from the past, and in the past it was used against people of color. And it seems like we're doing the same thing now, but we're just basically going to do it. I guess from what it sounds like, white males are pretty much excluded, so that we can include other races and the genders. And I got a problem with that.
Well,
it seems like we're doing it all over again.
Well, let's hear from Captain Rucker of the Minneapolis Fire Department, and you know, we're in Minneapolis, they're a little bit, a few steps ahead. Captain Rucker, I brought that up a little bit earlier. Can you address that again?
Yes. Minneapolis fire department, we are not excluding anyone. We are just making sure every person in the community, every race is knowledgeable of the opportunity to be a firefighter. We recruit different areas. We recruit on the newspaper, we recruit online, we recruit at colleges. So we're not just focusing on any specific minority, any specific race.
And they don't get a break on the tests or anything like that.
No, there's no extra points given for having any minority background. Everyone is testing at the same level. Everyone has the same opportunity. Everyone has to work for their position. There's no special thing given. Only specialty that we have right now, the preference points, is veterans points, and then if you're a city of Minneapolis resident. Mm-hmm. So the job opportunity is there. The information is presented to the community as a whole. We're just making sure that the whole community reflects, is knowledgeable of this opportunity, this career opportunity. So there's not any exclusion. Everyone is included with our recruitment effort.
Joe, thanks for your call. We appreciate it. Take care. Captain Rucker, thank you so much for joining us today. We appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
It's Captain Melanie Rucker with the Minneapolis Fire Department. Coming up, we're going to talk to a sociologist about the history and the trends when it comes to assimilating and integrating immigrants into the community. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
As a result of the Civil War, about one out of every three people in the South were suddenly freed from slavery. Bruce Levine writes about why the Civil War was America's second revolution and how it transformed the South and American politics in his new book, The Fall of the House of Dixie. We'll talk with Levine on the next Fresh Air.
And Fresh Air begins later today at noon on 89.7 NPR News. And stay with us in just about 20 minutes, beginning at 11 o'clock. It's Tech Tuesday from 11 till noon. Partly sunny skies today, a high of 44 degrees. Clouds tonight, a low of 33. Mostly sunny and a high of 45 on Wednesday. And partly cloudy Wednesday night, a low of 30. Support for 89.7 comes from Green Bean Delivery, offering home delivery of fresh organic produce and natural groceries, striving to make healthy eating more accessible to the communities of Greater Columbus. Details on Green Bean Delivery's products, as well as how to place an order, can be found online at greenbeandelivery.com. And All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Police and fire departments in Columbus and Minneapolis, St. Paul, where the largest settlements of Somali immigrants in the nation are expected to remain, have stepped up efforts to recruit them into their forces, both to better reflect the makeup of those cities, but also to better serve those cities. The idea of bringing immigrants into the first responder fold is not new. Joining us now to talk about that is Brown University sociologist John Logan. He's studied American ethnic mosaic in his work. Welcome to the show.
Good morning.
So the idea of bringing immigrants into police forces, into fire departments, that's kind of as old as immigration in the United States.
There's certainly a long history of that, and most people on the East Coast are aware that the Irish had a lock on the police and fire departments in some of the major cities around the turn of the century when those police and fire departments were really growing. And it's taken a long time, in fact, for that monopoly to be changed.
Did it start out that way for a lot of the same reasons they're looking at recruiting and diversifying the forces now to better serve the community?
No, I think at that time the issue was that there was an immigrant group that that actually had been near the bottom of the occupational ladder. And as they increased in numbers and also began to organize politically and have some political power, they were able to successfully demand patronage jobs, and they found their way into these particular parts of municipal bureaucracies that were growing, because both police and fire departments were really tiny and not really much funded in the 19th century, but by the early 20th century they were growing, and it was a real opportunity.
Obviously, we're a nation of immigrants, and over our history, many have had various success in adjusting to life here and assimilating and so forth. What are some of the factors that make for a successful adjustment? And assimilation's kind of gotten a bad rap, but for lack of a better word, we'll use that.
Well, we often now use the term incorporation, which is a more neutral term. It doesn't mean necessarily, like assimilation, that the new group gets to be just like the previous groups or totally integrated into the mainstream. The idea is generally that groups maintain a lot of their own identities. And one thing that we've found throughout the last 100 years is that every group tends to be very concentrated in a particular sector of the economy. There are lots of examples like this, but Jewish people were very concentrated in the garment industry in New York in the early 20th century, and there was a large Chinese garment industry in New York late in the 20th century. A lot of Indians in the motel business or the gas station business. And there's a lot of reasons why groups tend to concentrate in a particular sector. But one is that they create networks of referrals, and once they get a strong position within a kind of occupation, they work hard to defend it.
I guess Hassan Omar in Columbus, there are a lot of entrepreneurs who come from the East African community. It's hard to get hired. They start their own business. Is that it, or is there a strong entrepreneurial trend that they brought with them from Somalia?
This is a culture. The Somalis, actually, everybody wants to have his own business, and it's not unique here in the United States, in South Africa. It's over 14,000 Somalis own the business. In Kenya, almost half their economy is based on the Somali immigrants, and they call government under another government. If you go in Middle East or Dubai, you will see a huge Somali entrepreneurial business down there. In Columbus, in Minneapolis, the corridor on Moores and Cleveland, you can find 15 restaurants, as well as so many other healthcare, or you see so many businesses that community is making. And this is based on community is a business-minded society. And the reason you mentioned that, you know, they couldn't find, there are a lot of educated people, even though people are immigrant. When the government collapsed, there were so many different people came in town, different talent, different knowledge and experience. And then they were able to find their own way to establish a new life in America. So that's why actually they couldn't find a decent job. Even though they are educated, they were not certified to work. For example, the teacher who was a teacher back home,
right,
in Somalia, or doctor, he could not work in the United States because he needed recertification.
Professor Logan, does that entrepreneurial spirit, that has to be a benefit in the long run to the Somali community in the United States?
Well, certainly immigrants have historically always been highly represented in small business. Not all groups, but recently, for example, Koreans are an example of a group that's really very, very strongly oriented toward entrepreneurship on a small scale. And these are risky. It's risky to create a small business. But a lot of the job growth in the country is always from the startups of small business. So we've benefited greatly from having new groups coming in, that people are willing to take the risk and put in the long hours of work that are required to make those businesses profitable.
We've been talking about the Somali population here in Columbus and in Minneapolis, and the Somali community is made up largely of at least the first generation of immigrants, but they're also refugees. How does that factor into their incorporation in the United States, the refugee, the trauma and so forth associated with that?
Well, I'm sure it does make a difference. On average, African immigrants in the United States are characterized by a very high degree of education. It has been historically difficult for people from sub-Saharan Africa to get into the United States, and so they've done it often because they were graduate students or they had high levels of education and qualified for professional jobs. Recently, we've had some waves of people coming in as traders, doing small business retail activity, and then we've had some refugee settlement populations too. The refugees are probably a more mixed group. First of all, it's all kinds of people. Secondly, they have some advantages because usually there are community organizations that have helped to sponsor them and provide some kind of support network to help integrate them into the community. And I imagine that because the Somali community in Minneapolis is so large, that there must be some fairly substantial institutional supports there.
What do we know about how immigrants pick cities like Minneapolis and Columbus to settle in? And I suppose I could ask Hassan Omar, but just in general, what drives people to certain places the way they do?
Well, of course, with refugee streams, there's a good deal of steering that goes on, and then the question then is once settled, it often happens that an immigrant group will drift toward another new location. For example, many Vietnamese refugees after the Vietnam War were settled around the country, but a great many of them eventually migrated to the area around Anaheim, Orange County, and to some extent the San Francisco Bay Area. And so they go for a couple of reasons. One, always looking for opportunity. More than any other group, immigrants are not attached to a particular place in the United States, but they're mobile and looking for where they can find the best opportunities. And the other is that they maintain an interest in being part of the culture that they're familiar with. And so being an American, but at the same time being a Somali, a Vietnamese, a person of that background and culture, to be able to combine those two things is a big plus.
Yeah, Hassan Omar?
When I encounter people on the streets, they often ask me why Somalis in Columbus. And I always say it's a cost of living. I remember back in 1995, Columbus had only 35 Somalis, and traditionally people used to stay at metropolitan areas such as D.C., New York, and big cities.
Mm-hmm.
However, a couple of individuals came in Columbus as a refugee, and there were a lot of employment opportunities, which was not required even to speak the language. There was a lot of distribution centers, factories, warehouses, and so forth. And then Somalis are traditionally oral society. And then they said, you know, here, you can come over here. So that's what attracted us in Columbus. And today, more than 50,000, 45,000 Somali call Columbus home. And it became a well-known destination, as well as in Minneapolis. Early on 1982, a couple of people went there to work, and then they found a lot of opportunities. That's why.
Just like Professor Logan was just saying. Yeah.
Exactly. Also, people are dependent on one another. So anybody who comes in Midwest, not only in the Columbus, but anywhere in Midwest, trying to join in the community. And sometimes when I look around and I made a research, it's not unique for Somalis. I found like a German town or Italian village or something. Mm-hmm. So those signifies that, you know, when people come here, they always concentrate one specific location.
Uh-huh.
And the later on, when they become establishment, they move out to other states or any other, you know, neighborhoods.
Yeah, Professor Logan, we have a German village in Columbus. We have an Italian village. You know, that's pretty typical around the country, isn't it?
It is. What's interesting is that this Italian village, German village, probably are over 100 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And as often happens, there may be some original, authentic Italian stores or institutions, churches, or German in those places. But most of the German or Italian residents probably don't live there anymore. And so it has an identity that people come back to, but don't necessarily make their own place of residence. But surely there was a time when the whole community made a particular place a place to live.
How many generations does it take to take root and take hold for roots to take hold in a place?
Well, to become rooted in a place, I think that can happen very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
A first generation of immigrants can create an identity in a place and make it their own and make it a livable place. What's harder to think through is how long does it take for people to begin to melt away from that very strong attachment and become more widely dispersed and incorporated into the mainstream society, find more opportunities. And I've found that could easily be a 100-year process. Three generations, for sure, is not a very long time. So when we have new immigrant groups, whether they're refugees or coming for other reasons, I'd expect in the first generation to see some enclaves created, and then maybe 30 to 50 years later, they'll tend to diminish.
John Logan, thank you so much for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thank you.
John Logan is a professor of sociology at Brown University. Also, Hassan Omar of the Somali Community Association of Ohio. Hassan, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.